Dhamma talk is something which I heard some time ago, and I always like to be a little bit controversial, because if you come to a Buddhist center and you hear what you already know, it's just boring, and what's the point of coming here? So I'm going to take one of these teachings which have been quite popular and turn it upside down, which I love doing. So this was a teaching which I remember last February. Yeah, I was over in San Francisco, and I was invited to give a talk with I think the guy who translates for the Holiness of Dalai Lama, and a Zen Roshi and a Buddhist monk, just to have a talk together. And it started getting very boring, you know, people just agreeing too much. It's nice to agree sometimes, but when there's a little bit of disagreement, life becomes a little bit more interesting. So I decided to put my spanner in the works when people said, oh, you know, like Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh always says, everything is independent. Interdependent, sorry. And I say, no way, it's not interdependent. And we had a nice discussion then, because that's something which, you know, has come about in Western Buddhism. Everything is interdependent. And I say, my goodness, if that's the case, we're in big trouble. Which means that what you do affects me. Thank you very much. But that is not always a case. Sometimes things are interdependent. Sometimes they're not, thank goodness. Sometimes you connect. But when you connect, you must always remember how to disconnect as well. Otherwise you're in a big mess. So what that actually means is that we have to connect with so much stuff in our life. And you know, part of what I have to do is people always telling me their problems. Why are you telling me their problems? You know, it's not my fault. I never did anything. But people come and tell me all their problems with their family and their husband and their wife and their kids and their exams, especially now, exams. I don't know how many people come to get a blessing for their exams at this time of the year. Why? You should have been doing your studies. It's a bit late now. Don't expect me to do everything for you. it's not my problem. But every now and again you have to connect with people, and out of kindness, out of compassion, give them a boost of energy. Just, even if you haven't got any powers, convince them that you have. Fake it. Because, you know, the belief is really important. If you believe that, oh, Ajahn Brahm's chanted for me, I'm going to do well, you get confidence and you do well. So that's, you know, sometimes that's what really happens, confidence building. But so many people ask you to do all this stuff for them, and in the end, if you don't know how to disconnect, you carry all these people's problems around with you. And I do know many, many counselors. And some time ago, there was one of the early Buddhists who came here. It's a wonderful woman, and was always one of these women who had, you know, she had a very nice family, nothing wrong with her, just successful in life, and she would listen to people's problems. And she ended up jumping off Garrett Road Bridge, found in the water, dead, suicided. And it was a terrible thing. That was about 25, 30 years ago. And when I heard that, I realized that, yeah, you can listen to other people's problems, connect with them. But if you don't know how to disconnect, you're going to be in big trouble. So how do you disconnect from other people's problems? Ajahn Chah's wonderful piece of advice, and I give this to you. If you haven't heard it before, please listen to it, remember it, and most important, practice it. Because he told me personally, he said, later on in your life, you know, you're going to be a teacher, people are going to come up with all these problems they're going to ask you. You have to be compassionate and kind and accept people's problems. You've got to be a trash can, he said, or a dustbin, depending on what culture you come from. A trash can, a dustbin. People are going to put all their rubbish inside of you. But he said the trick is to be a rubbish bin or a trash can with a hole in the bottom. So you can receive everything, but you keep nothing. So it all goes through you. So as soon as one person has told you their problems, you are immediately empty for the next person to tell you their problems. You're never full. And after all those sessions are gone, you can walk up totally empty. You keep nothing, which is the wonderful way of disconnecting. But when I say disconnect, I don't mean you just disconnect right from the very beginning. I don't want to hear you. Just go away. It's not my problem. You made that mess. It's your karma, not my karma. Get out of here. Now that is just disconnect from the beginning. You've got to connect with people first of all, but then also learn how to disconnect. Which is one of the difficult things these days. People always say, now I'm included here, time poor. Actually, I wrote to someone today, I was not time poor, I'm time destitute. So, sometimes it's like that because sometimes that you have to take time off to disconnect from other people. If you don't do that, you find you can't connect to yourself, to your own requirements and needs, to learn how to rest and relax for yourself. That is so important in life. And if you don't have time for yourself, if you're always interconnected with other people, there's no downtime for you. There's no time to rest, relax. It's why that in monasticism, I always say that it's a balance which we try and perfect. The balance between service and I call solitude. And now that's not just for being a senior monk. This is or a nun. It's for each one of you to have time for yourself, as well as time for doing all of your duties, interconnected with your family, interconnected with your business, interconnected with your committee, Buddhist Society president. That's important. But you also have to have time when you disconnect. And just spend time by yourself. And you know, a lot of the problems in our modern world, you know, that you don't really need psychologists. Please excuse me, any psychologists here. But, you know, you've already got too many people on your books, and all psychologists are stressed out, and they're actually quite happy that I tell people, you know, not to go to them because they've already got enough business. They want a bit of peace and quiet. It reminded me, I went to this Thai restaurant on Monday and gave them some chanting, and I said, "Do you really want me to actually do the chanting for you?" He said, "Yes, yes." And I was talking to the manager, and I said, "Do you realize what happens? You know, I was banned from one Thai restaurant in the north of Perth. I was banned. They would never let me go there again to do any chanting. Because what happened after I went there the next week, they had so many customers that everyone was run off their feet. They were all stressed out, all because of me. So they said, never again. I increased business too much." So I say, "Are you really sure you want me to do this special Buddhist chanting which gets more people into your door?" He said, "Yes, we do." He said, "Other people get stressed out." It's okay, I'm only the boss. That's all my workers will have to do the stressing out. All I do is count the money. That's not very compassionate. But anyhow, even so many people stressed out in today's world, always working too hard, always doing too much. And why is that? Because we don't have this wonderful time for ourselves to be able to disconnect. But if you do have time for yourself, what do? They don't really disconnect. Physically they may disconnect, but mentally they're still worried about all these problems which they have. Their mind is like a rubbish bin. And it's true, we always keep the rubbish. You know, we never keep the good stuff. Okay, here's, you know, it's 3 months since I last was really giving talks. One of my favorite stories, here it comes again. Many of you heard it. If you haven't heard it, this is one of the best of stories. And it's, you know, I tell this so often when I'm in Serpentine, when people come for their problems, how to disconnect from their problems. The two chicken farmer story. If you haven't heard this before, this is one of the best. There are two chicken farmers. The first chicken farmer gets up early in the morning and he goes to the chicken shed to collect the produce from the night before. He takes the basket into the chicken shed. And he goes into the chicken shed and fills a whole basket full of chicken shit and leaves the eggs in the shed to rot. And he brings the shit back into the house with him. It makes a big stink throughout the whole house, and the family are not very happy with him. That is what we call stupid chicken farmer. Chicken farmer number two goes into the shed and he fills the basket full of eggs. He leaves the shit in the shed to rot. It becomes valuable fertilizer later on, but you don't bring it into the house with you, do you? Of course not, that's bad. So he brings the eggs back into the house, makes a beautiful omelette for his family's breakfast, and sells the rest of the eggs in the market for cash. That is a smart chicken farmer. And what does that simile mean? It means when you remember all the things which happened last week, what do you put in your basket and bring home with you? You're all shit collectors, aren't you? You remember all the terrible things which happened. That's how you get done by the police for speeding. Your boss, you know, really blasted you and said rotten things to you. And now your wife came late, your husband forgot to do things. That is what you remember and bring home with you. That's called shit collectors. So at the very least, disconnect from that stuff. And if you want to connect with anything, why not connect with all the beautiful things which happened in the last week? Collect the eggs. And then you make this beautiful omelette for your family. You can sell the rest of the eggs in the market for cash, for happiness, and for inspiration. And you have a much happier life. You know, all sorts of things happened to me in the last week. You know, stupid things. Just had one of our monks, just came from Thailand for a visit. He was only here for 4 or 5 hours, and then you had to take him to hospital. He's really sick. I don't know why they let him come from Thailand on the plane. So there's lots more problems and worries and troubles. But I'm not going to remember that. One of the wonderful things which happened last week, which I'm sharing with you, is, you know, connect and disconnect. We've got this incredible, wonderful connection with the monks at New Norcia. So every year they come and visit us, and every year we go and visit them. So we went up there yesterday afternoon. Spent the whole afternoon, you know, with the new abbot, John, and who else was there? Bernard, and Anthony, and Michael, and good old Dom Chris. These are people I've known for it's over 25 years or 30 years we've been going up and hanging out together. So what do you do there? We talk. What about? Monkey business. What do you expect? And it's wonderful just because when we go and see them, they can actually give us a different perspective, you know, on what they're doing. And we give them a different perspective on what they're doing. And it's just such mutually beneficial. And of course, what do we focus on? Yeah, every now and again we focus on what separates us, which is important to do, so we can actually learn different perspectives. A lot of times there's so much which we share in common, so we have a beautiful, beautiful time together. So that's one of the wonderful things we do. And also, isn't it an inspiring thing? Many people go to their religions and they say, we're the best, don't go to those other mob. It's just sometimes it's like football teams, like here in Western Australia. Fremantle, Dockers, and the West Coast Eagles, which is the best? And of course, you know, okay, on the field you may argue and play and just fight for each other, but afterwards they're best of friends. Isn't it wonderful that religions could be the same? Be the best of friends. That's actually quite inspiring to actually just see that. If people from different religions, there's a lot of things in Christianity I don't agree with. There's lots of things which I do agree with. I agree with Christmas, that's always a good time to give monks presents. Easter, we get Easter eggs in the monastery. Just because I'm a Buddhist, I would never refuse an Easter egg. Especially ones with rabbit ears. And just as many other things which we can learn from one another. But the nicest thing there is that it's a wonderful thing to bring home with you. A beautiful thing which we do every year. So, when actually we can remember the beautiful stuff, we're connecting with the good stuff, and the bad stuff we're disconnecting with. You're not always interconnected. You actually make a choice what you connect with and what you don't. at least you could connect with the good, the beautiful, the joyful, the happy stuff. And people say, oh, that's just being in denial. There's so many problems in this world. There's so many difficulties in this world. Yes, of course there are, but does it really help focusing on the shit of life? Does it really add to solutions? And of course, you find out after a while it doesn't. Sometimes when working out the problems of life, we forget to celebrate the beauty of life. We look about the problems in our relationship, husband and wife. Sometimes we just focus too much on the problems. We forget also to focus on the beautiful stuff, the beautiful times we have together. And I always tell people, you learn much more from what goes right than you ever learn from what goes wrong. I tell this in business conferences. I have a really interesting life, going to all sorts of weird places, teaching all sorts of weird things to weird people, like people in suits. No, they're nice. And just tell, look, why is it when something goes wrong in your company or in your football team or in your party, you're losing the election, why is it that people just always end up just, you know, just thinking about it and just having a big meeting, the what went wrong meetings? And that just really is a bummer. It really just makes you really upset, loses your motivation, makes you really negative, always looking for someone or something to blame. That just makes everyone depressed. Why don't we have what went right meetings? When something really works, then have a big conference. Why did it work? So we learn from successes. So in your life, what that means, you know, if you have a wonderful day with your partner, this weekend, beautiful weekend, don't just take it for granted. Sit down with your partner and say, why do we have a wonderful weekend this weekend? What did you do? What did I do? Where do we go? How do we talk to each other? Why was this a happy weekend? And learn from it. Because you learn much more from successes than you ever learn from mistakes. What usually happens, you know, something goes wrong in your relationship and you've got to talk it out. Come, we've got to talk together so it never happens again. And that just really makes, it emphasizes the faults rather than celebrates the beautiful stuff. So at the very least, disconnect from your faults and connect with something more beautiful. So especially if it's the past, the best thing is actually cut off the whole past. I love doing that. Yeah, you are made of your past. You're a creature of your upbringing. No way. You can actually change any time you like just because you've been abused or just because you've had a beautiful life. It does not matter, really. Any moment, you can actually choose to be free from your past. It's such a radical idea, because I've been arguing with psychologists for years over this, and I think I've finally actually won them over, at least many of them. You don't sometimes have to, you know, all that past stuff which you've had to deal with, the difficulties, you know, the pain, the abuse, physical abuse, you know, not being sort of being deprived or whatever else it was you had to experience in your life. Yeah, you can choose to connect with it, but you don't have to. You can let it go, which is such a radical idea. Many people say, what are you talking about? And I've known many people have done that, gone through such incredible difficulties and pain, they've disconnected from it. And they decided they're not going to be a prisoner of their past. If you want a metaphor, your past is a prison cell whose door is always open. You can walk out anytime you want. The point is, number one, we don't think we're allowed to walk out. You need someone like myself, someone you respect, to say it's not forbidden. You can let it go. You know what it's like sometimes? People always say, oh, you've done a bad thing. And sometimes, I think I said it was last week, sometimes people would just say, oh, you know, you must feel remorse, you must feel sorry. Do you feel sorry for what you did? No, I let it go. It doesn't really wash in today's society. People think that you are just callous. But sometimes it's the best thing to do, to let it go and move on. The old acknowledge what happened, don't hide it, forgive it. Because once it's forgiven, no punishment, no problem, learn from it, let it go. Move forward. Never carry the past. And that's one of the things. What do we do? How do we do that? We learn that in this meditation which we do here. Because that's all we're really doing. We're learning how to relax the past. I like that idea of relaxing, not just the body. Relaxing your past. What do I mean by that? Ache in the body. A pain. I've got an issue in my nose. Hay fever. So, I've got a choice. I can blow it. No, I'm not going to blow it. I'm going to relax it. It's relaxing now. Don't need to blow it anymore. My mindfulness can relax the nose. And when you can do things like this, it actually shows you just how the past, the irritations of the past, now they're always calling at you, as if they're saying, you did something wrong, you've got to deal with this, you've got to sort of make amends, you know, you've got to say sorry, you've got to never do it again, you've got to find some way of travelling into the past to undo whatever you did. It's this irritation. And sometimes we think by blowing our nose, by dealing with that irritation, we're actually going to solve the problem. You don't. A lot of times when we keep focusing and connecting with the mistakes of our past, it just keeps those mistakes in the front of our mind. We are literally collecting the shit and it stinks out our mind. So to be able to let it go, just relax it. Be calm, because again, relaxing goes against this terrible thing called fear. We're afraid of letting go of our past. Number one, because we think that's against our culture, we shouldn't do that. I'm going to be an immoral, irresponsible person if I don't deal with the past. It's not being immoral. One of the great beauties of Buddhism is to say it is moral, it is ethical to let go of the past and not to keep carrying it around. It's a good thing to do. And you find that once you do that, you have the encouragement to actually to let go of the past. It takes away the fear. And then when you're not afraid of doing it, you try and you do it. And once you do disconnect from your past, you feel this great sense of freedom. You are outside of the prison. It's not this big, heavy burden. You know what it's like sometimes? It's like you've got this big, heavy sled. You know, you're tied to this big, heavy weight. You know, behind you, you have to drag through life. It's not just dragging through life, it's like dragging up a mountain. It's not just like a mountain, it's like a mountain of treacle and sticky stuff, like wet mud. And it's just so hard to keep dragging yourself up this mountain of life, carrying this big heavy load on your back. And that's what life is like for many people. You know, the past and all the stuff which happened. Imagine that you could just let go of that heavy load. You can just dance up the mountain, so light, so free. You are disconnected from your past and free to enjoy your present. So often people have these amazing opportunities, but they can't enjoy and take hold of them. They're still imprisoned by what happened to them. This is called disconnecting from the past. You're not just connected to your past. If you were, your prison sentence would be forever. I know sometimes people say, oh, people need to be punished. Look, I know enough about psychology, I know enough about human beings and the mind. Please don't punish other people. They punish themselves too much already. You know what I'm talking about, all the stuff which you've done. You punish yourself too much already. You don't need punishment from any other people. You need forgiveness, letting go, love, kindness, freedom. So this is letting go of the past. It is disconnecting. And the other one is disconnecting from the future. Again, people are so worried. Ah, what's going to happen? When I first came to Australia here, I think it was actually Dennis sitting in the back. You show me this movie. I know it was actually Sanat told me the movie. It was a movie made, I think, in Western Australia. And what was it called? It was about what would happen if there was a nuclear war. And it was called Threads. I remember now, Threads, the documentary. What would happen if there was a nuclear war? And what would get bombed first of all? You know, Garden Island, Pierce Air Force Base, Bodhinyana Monastery, they would bomb us. And then what would happen next? And it just gave you so much fear. Because for those of you my age, I mean, that was actually quite a possibility. The whole world destroyed by a nuclear war. It never happened. But there was so much fear going on at the time. And people had their own nuclear bunkers just in case. Fear ruled the world, as it does even these days too. And because of the fear of the future, you know, a lot of times I know by psychology that whatever you're afraid will happen, usually you make happen, is the fear creates that future. And when people have negative fears, we are creating a negative world. It's not just science, the mind, human beings. We are part of nature and we affect the future. And I don't mean just looking out for climate change. Fear is sometimes makes these things happen, much more than the things themselves. What is it that I remember reading from Edgar Allan Poe, The Mask of the Red Death? Those are the sorts of books I like to read when I was young. But I remember in that little book by Edgar Allan Poe, that he said something very, very wise, because they had all these plagues in Europe, you know, 1600 years ago, and they actually wiped out half of the population. Literally, the whole of Europe, you know, was devastated, you know, by the plague, and also Asia as well. You know, like half of the people here dead. Of all people, imagine that. That was just really a Holocaust. And they had this image of these, they always thought because of the spirituality of the time, it was caused by devils or demons, you know, interacting with human beings. And they had this meeting of these demons in a forest somewhere in France. And one of them just come from Berlin and said, I killed 2,000 in Berlin. And one from London said, I killed 3,000. One from Brussels said, I killed 4,000. And one from one of these European cities said something which really hit me. He said, I only killed 500, and fear killed the other 5,000. And I thought, wow, now that person who wrote that had understood a lot about epidemics. Fear of the future. And please, honestly, if you're having something like a relationship with somebody and you're afraid that the relationship's not going to last, you destroy it with your fear. If you've got a body and you're afraid it's going to get sick, you make it sick with your fear. If you've got a job, a really nice job, you're afraid you're going to lose the job, your fear will destroy the job. So fear is one of the worst things in the world, which creates, you know, what we're most afraid of, that negativity, which is one of the reasons why I'm saying, please disconnect from the future. And the future can be anything you like. And actually, by disconnecting and not worrying about it, you're actually doing sometimes the very best. Obviously, you don't disconnect all the time, but at least have some time when you're not so worried about what's going to happen next. Because then you can enjoy this moment. And as I said during the meditation, it's a very simple but powerful insight. Now is where your future is being made. This moment is the only time you'll ever have for your future. So when you go worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow, you're actually neglecting the very place right now where your future is being made. I know it's so nice to disconnect. I know I have lots of things to worry about. I've got so many monasteries which depend upon me now. There's so many things you've got to worry about in the past. I've got, you know, sometimes people don't understand what it's like being a monk. You think you just sit up here, and you give a talk, and then you spend the rest of the week in your cave enjoying things. People feed you, no worries, nothing to do. Oh, it's so nice. Yeah, sure. Oh, just to emphasize this, I was in Singapore for some anniversary talk, about 2,000 or 3,000 people in the evening. And at the end of my talk, question time, this young guy came up to the microphone and said, "It's all right for you to teach like this. You don't live in the real world." He said, "I'm in IT, I've been working all day. You know, yeah, it's okay for you as a monk to say all this stuff, but it doesn't work in the real world." That's what he said to me. And I got on the microphone back and said, "I'm not going to accept that." And then I told him what I was doing, getting up 4 o'clock in the morning. Actually, I didn't get up at 4 o'clock this morning, I got up at 3 o'clock. Sometimes I get up early. When people come, and they, these are contractors, because I was also doing building, and they say, "Oh, we'll see you first thing in the morning." "Oh, great, 4 o'clock, 4 a.m. Okay, hang on a bit. "Oh, you said first thing in the morning. That's when I get up. You come up." No way will any contractor come up at that time. First thing in the morning for them is 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. That's mid-afternoon for a monk. But anyhow. So I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning that morning in Singapore, and I did all of the things I've been doing all day. And it's about 10 o'clock, 10:30. And after I'd listed, one after the other, all the difficult duties, just for that one day, then the guy came on the microphone back again. He said, "Wow, I never really understood how much work like a monk does." He said, "You know, before hearing you, I always planned one day to become a monk, but not now." I missed one. I should have said that. Now I've said that, now no one's going to become a monk anymore. Well, and we gave a lot of happiness as well. So it's that service. Sometimes you do a lot of service, but it's also a lot of solitude. So you have to learn how, to disconnect from all the problems and responsibilities of your life. You know that sometimes people are far too responsible. And I would like to encourage more irresponsibility in life. Can you have 1 hour a week, at least, your irresponsible hour, to celebrate irresponsibility? Or start a club, the Irresponsible Club, where you can come to a venue and be totally irresponsible for 1 hour a week. Just to disconnect from being so responsible. All these things you're supposed to worry about, all the duties you have to do, all the concerns which, the world is falling apart. You've got to be responsible. You can't take time off. At least if you take time off, that's one person all these other people don't have to worry about. You can at least be happy and well. So sometimes responsibility is being far too connected to life. I know sometimes just playing around, doing stupid things, being irresponsible for just 1 hour, give it a try. What happens then? You find you relax, you find some peace, and you're disconnected from life. And what are you actually connecting with? You're connected with yourself. Because being responsible is actually following what other people tell you you're supposed to do, what you're supposed to be, what a real monk is supposed to be, what a real teacher is supposed to be, what a real holy man is supposed to be. And it sucks being a holy man. You can't have any fun. Or can you? It's people's idea of what a holy man is. And I keep telling people anyway, I'm only 65. And life doesn't begin for a holy man until you're at least 70. So anyway, give me another 5 years to be holy. So anyway, in the meantime, sometimes a bit of irresponsibility, a bit of play. What happens when you have that irresponsibility and play? You're actually connecting with yourself. You're connecting with fun and joy. Actually, the subject of our conversation with the Benedictine monks at New Norcia yesterday was on self-love, on the importance to love yourself. But one of the points I made up, I said, okay, we talk about love and being kind to one another, but what about the important part of love called joy and fun? why is it that in relationships, you know, I read books, I look at newspapers, and why is it that sometimes relationships end because the fun has gone out of the relationship? Sometimes they say that. They don't say we don't love each other anymore. They say the fun has gone out, the joy, the spontaneity, the irresponsibility. And that actually points to an important part of life. That part of love is joy, fun, being irresponsible with one another. In the sense, you just do things for the sake of doing them. You are actually in life, rather than in all these ideas of what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to do it, when you're supposed to do it, and all this other stuff which people impose upon you. And so when people impose upon all that stuff, you're just connected to the world and all the rules and what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to do it. Now, the longer I become a monk, the more I don't like rules. And people say, well, Ajahn Brahm, you live by so many rules. Actually, I only live by two rules. I would say this to people, you know, we have five precepts in Buddhism. Some people, they just can't remember five precepts. Too much. This happened in Thailand. There's many places are like this. Thailand, first time I went there, all these people, they're going to the monastery, supposed to keep in five precepts, and they were fishing all the time. So you're breaking your precepts, you're killing the fish. You know what the Thai people used to say? Say, look, we don't kill the fish, we just take them out of the water and they die by themselves. It's amazing what excuses you can make. So you set up rules and people find some way of finding a loophole around them. Even something like the five precepts, I have lawyers trying to find out loopholes for you. Like this one guy here, I always really loved him, a really nice guy, and he used to say, actually he's still alive, I don't know, he may even be listening to this, he said, I'd really like to become a monk. I said, oh great, you know, we'll ordain you, you're a really nice guy. He said, but on one condition. So what's that? I can have every Saturday night off. That'd be actually quite attractive. I'm sure if we had that arrangement, many of you would become monks and nuns, just one day a week off. You can't have a day a week off. You're either a monk or you're not a monk, you're a nun or you're not a nun. You can't sort of be halfway in between. But anyway, so all these ideas of even like precepts. I only keep two precepts, which is never harming anybody else, never harming oneself. The two precepts, you get to the heart of it. Now why do we have all these rules for? You know, simply because you don't want to harm anybody. You don't want to harm yourself either, the two precepts. And actually for those of you who say where this came from, this is based on the Buddha's own advice to his son Rahula, in the Rahula Awada Sutta, just to show that I know what I'm talking about. I don't just make this up, it actually comes mostly from either Ajahn Chah or from the Buddha himself. And when you actually get to understand that harming yourself or harming others, and sometimes I thought it was two precepts, but basically it's just one precept, because whatever harms you harms others, whatever harms others harms yourself. And what does harming other people or harming yourself? Please be kind to yourself and disconnect sometimes, play, just be irresponsible, even you've got so much work to do. So many assignments to complete, so many duties to perform, so many talks to give and emails to answer. You know my definition of irresponsibility? It is never do today what you can put off until tomorrow because you might die tonight. But actually, you can see when you contemplate that, that's actually true. And imagine just answering all your emails, washing all your dishes, getting everything done, being a really goody-goody-goody. Everybody likes you because you do everything just in time, and you're never late, and you're always on time, and you do everything, and then you die. What's the point of that? So for goodness sake, you know, life is not just about pleasing others. Is it? Pleasing your husband, pleasing your wife, pleasing your kids, pleasing your parents, pleasing your monk, pleasing... I've got so many people you have to please these days. Pleasing the government, pleasing the tax office, pleasing... So many people you have to please. Pleasing the environmental people, pleasing the treasurer by putting in your taxes. So many people have got the pressure on you. Do you ever feel like you're in prison? Sometimes it comes a time, oh, to hell with all of that. I'm going to be irresponsible. I'm going to actually just to be with myself, be kind to myself, give myself some time, give myself, even I've got so much work to do, even there's so many things which I should be doing, yeah, I'll do it tomorrow. I often do that, and I never regret it. You find, you know, a lot of the stuff which you should be doing, you didn't really need to do it anyway. And after a while, because, you know, you're irresponsible, people actually stop giving you jobs to do. So it's win-win both ways. I shouldn't say that because we're trying to get a committee for next year and being irresponsible. So when you're on the committee, you actually learn how to be irresponsible. So this is learning how to disconnect sometimes. Because when you disconnect from the world and others, we're so connected to that world, we can't really let go. We can't just be with ourselves and just be with this moment and be still. There's always so much to do. And you never calm down this active mind by getting everything done first. People always have these lists. Get it out of the way. And I was actually quite surprised. You know, we see this thing, the last 5 or 6 years, people have these things called bucket lists. You know, things to do, I don't know why they call it a bucket list. I reckon it's because things to do before they kick the bucket. Is that right? That's right, is it? Okay. I got it right. Amazing. So, all these things they have to do. So it's just more things to do. No wonder it kills them. So I've got a bucket list. And my first thing to do on my bucket list is no more bucket lists. Put that one up there first of all. So that way, you can actually learn how to disconnect. And not be a doer, but I would say a beer. People like beers in Australia. And I like beer as well. To be a beer, not a doer. So I'm all into beer. Become a beer instead of a doer. So anyway, that's why, again, I mentioned this in one of my books recently. I travel around the world a lot. I've been to many countries. I've been to so many huge cities. And every place I go, it's very rare that I ever see a human being. So few human beings in our world. Even here in Perth, so few human beings. There's a lot of human doings, a lot of humans going somewhere, but very few actually being here. So are you a human being or a human going? You're always going somewhere, doing something. You're never here. So now why do you get stressed out? So disconnect, please, and just be. What should I be? Whatever you like. Be irresponsible. Just be irresponsible and just be here. See what happens. Take off all the bucket lists. Have you got lists of things you have to do this weekend? Chuck it in the bin. Really, I'm challenging you. All your lists of stuff you're supposed to do, throw it away. And if people say, well, you're supposed to come to my house, you're supposed to do this. You say, Ajahn Brahm told me. Blame me, I don't mind. Because I'm a rubbish bin. So you can blame me. I'll accept everything, all the blame, but it goes straight out afterwards. I've got this big hole in the bottom. It goes straight through. I'm not going to worry about what you say about me. So, but it's great for you. How many weekends can you have for yourself? Can you have just to be? Can you disconnect? Look, quite frankly, all of you, you serve so much. You do so much for others. You really give. But how many times can you actually give to yourself? And just be. You know, that will help health, emotional problems, difficulties, when you can just stop and just be, and be still, disconnect. Then when you do connect again afterwards, you connect with perspective, with energy, with love. And the other part of love, with joy too. How many joyful people do you know? Why? Because they're just running around too much. They've got no time for joy. That joy, that's in the bottom of my bucket list. I get all these other things out of the way first of all. You know, joy, last of all somewhere. If you even put it on the bucket list. So if you actually put that as a priority, disconnect for a little while. So you're not always connected. The idea of interconnectedness, you can if you want, you don't if you don't have to. You can just let go. The Buddha said, to be an island to yourself. Now that is where I say the interconnectedness is confounded by the Buddha's own famous saying, be an island unto oneself. Rest, relax, just be. And then you can go out into the world and connect and build bridges with other people. But if you haven't got a safe island, you don't know how to be an island to yourself, you'll never ever be able to make bridges with others. Why? Because you're too tired. You're too exhausted. You just don't have any joy left. You can't relate. You can't. If you do connect anything to other people, you connect more shit to other people. People have got enough already. They don't need yours. They need your eggs. So please, connect with the eggs of life. And disconnect from the shit. And then you'll be a wonderful person. Thank you for listening. Sadhu! Very good. Excellent. That'll do. Okay. Well, it worked tonight. My talk about how to disconnect, and for the first time we've actually connected to the internet. There's something weird about this. Okay, first of all, from the UK, a Mr. Cameron. No, it's not, it's someone else. How do we explain disconnection or letting go of stress and suffering to non-Buddhists? Depends what they are. Just sit them down, teach them mindfulness, because mindfulness is like a spy. It's like the CIA. It's undercover meditation technique. So people are actually meditating, but they don't realize it. Because if you're non-Buddhist, you teach them meditate, and they think, oh my goodness, I can't meditate, that's just too religious. So I teach them mindfulness, and they think, oh, that's okay. It's the same thing, it's just marketing. So teach them mindfulness, and they can learn how to disconnect and let go. Just tell them, if you want to go on holiday, just go to the temple. Number one, it's free. You don't have to stand in line to actually to check in and get yourself patted down, which is really embarrassing. People pat you down. You know, because I'm fat here, they always think, what's underneath your robe? So it's my tummy. Sometimes I think they think it's a suicide belt. Got the wrong religion. So that's, you know, that's really discrimination to monks with gravitas. So that's how you can explain it. But explaining in words is not good enough. You need examples. So your way of letting go of stress, your fact that you can be happy, your way that you can just, you know, let go of the past and just enjoy the present, that is worth more than a million words. So it's who you are and how you relate. That is how you explain things to others. When one is clinically depressed and the mind is filled with negativity, how does one begin disconnected from the chicken poo and cease collecting it? First of all, to realize what you're doing. I don't know why you call chicken poo. It's chicken shit, okay? There are some words which don't have other translations. And I get into trouble with that, but everyone else uses that word. And look, whenever anybody criticizes me, you're a monk, I'm not a vicar, Okay, if you're a vicar, you know, in these old days, you're supposed to always, you know, say the right words. But I'm a Buddhist monk, but I follow the teachings of the Buddha. And the Buddha, I can show you this in the scriptures, two places, Aranavibhanga Sutta and also the Vinaya. The Buddha said to his monks, monks, whenever you teach, you should teach in the local language. This is Australia. So I demand my right to use the word shit. That's true, you know. It's like, you're teaching my kids bad speech. No, get real. Have you ever listened to what your kids talk about in the playgrounds of our schools? They're already corrupted. I'm not going to make them more corrupted. Anyway, here we go. So, if I might, first of all, just get that idea in your head that you can. And what are you doing that for? When you give a simile like that, it makes it very clear. So, how do you actually to begin? Number one, realizing what you're doing. Number two, giving yourself permission to let go. Because a lot of times we feel we don't deserve to let go. That somehow or other that punishing ourselves for our past is the right thing to do. And that stupid idea is one thing which I've been almost like one of my missions in life. You don't need to punish yourself. Please, no more punishment. This world has got enough suffering. You don't need to punish yourself or punish others. You know, and you can't blame yourself. Somebody going through a divorce. I don't know why this is, but the women always blame themselves when it's the husband does the adultery. Please excuse me, this is gender biased, but I think it's accurate. Anecdotal, and please, I'm not doing this to put anyone down. But why is it that women always get into guilt more than men do? Please don't do that. I want gender equity. You be like a man and just don't get guilty. And a lot of times, you never did anything. Still, you feel guilty about it. I don't know what I did, but I must have done something wrong. And you didn't do anything wrong, for goodness sake. So first of all, you know, don't get into the punishment business. And then, you know, you have all these wonderful ways of learning how to let go. But just saying these things, again, is not good enough, because sometimes we need to do something much more than that. That's why we have ceremonies. So even in Buddhism we have ceremonies. I don't talk much about ceremonies in Buddhism. But you know, when you get married, you have a ceremony. When you die, we have a ceremony. I know I've told people when I die that I just want to be put in the yellow recycling bins and just taken away on a Friday at Serpentine. Nice and easy, no ceremony needed, but I don't think I can get away with that. We have ceremonies. It helps us actually to let go of our loved ones who die. It helps us go through that grieving period when we have a ceremony. We have so many ceremonies, and we also have the letting go ceremony, which I developed. So in a person from Sydney here, try this. I teach this on retreats, and people think it's great. If you got something in the past, clinically depressed, filled with negativity, you got to acknowledge it first of all. That's basic psychology. You've got to write it down. So from Sydney, write it down on a piece of paper. But don't use any type of paper, special paper. I wrote this in my book, you know what's coming next. You have to write it down on toilet paper. It's very cheap and it's a very long roll. Doesn't matter how much negativity you've got, the toilet roll will always manage to actually to, it will be big enough. And psychologically, you have to get the right association. Write it down in brown ink. So all your negativity, all the bad things which have happened to you, the bad things which you've done, you know, all the terrible stuff, write it down on a piece of paper, toilet paper in brown ink. Write the whole lot, the whole toilet roll, I don't care. And when you're writing it down, you're making this association, which is part of psychology, with the other brown stuff which goes on toilet paper. Because it is shit you're carrying around with you, all the negative stuff. When you write it down in brown ink on toilet paper, the mind actually realizes, this is shit I'm carrying around with me. And if you've even got a tiny bit of brown stuff on toilet paper, how many of you even though you may be a member of Greenpeace, you may be a member of the World Wildlife, how many of you reuse your toilet paper? You know it's got two sides. I think even the leader of the Green Party in Australia never uses both sides of the toilet paper. What a waste of trees. Even a tiny bit of brown stuff on the toilet paper, you throw it away straight away. You never fold it up and keep it in your pocket for another day. I hope. And it's the same association you have when you write down all your negativity, all the terrible things which you've done to you, with brown ink on a roll of toilet paper. The association is there. This is not the sort of stuff you should keep. So having written it down, then you do the letting go ceremony. You take it to this magical shrine where you spend a lot of your life sitting down contemplating the meaning of life. The toilet! And when you're in the cubicle, you have to read it again, first of all, to make the association. Terrible things would happen to you. And then you put it in the bowl. And then you don't need to do any chanting. The chanting is done automatically. You press the holy button called the letting go button. And when you press that letting go button, all the water comes out. And the toilet paper containing all the negativity of your past goes round the bend into the sewers where it belongs. People have done that, but please don't do that at this center. We have enough trouble with our plumbing as it is. We don't want it all to be blocked. Do it in your own home. Or government toilets. I shouldn't say things like that. But that actually ceremony, I taught that in Sydney years ago to a psychology conference. You know, they all wrote it down. They steal all my best ideas. And they don't give me any recognition, certainly no sort of, what's it called, royalties. My idea. But try it. Honestly, put your bad ideas on a piece of toilet paper. Brown ink, has to be brown ink. You know, dark brown, not light brown. Make the association, and then flush it away. It works. At least it helps, you know, with the letting go. Because just saying let go is not enough. You've got to do something. Last from France. Doesn't the teaching of no self precisely mean that in the deepest sense we are interconnected and that it cannot be otherwise since we don't have any permanent independent self? The teaching of non-self means that the whole thing can stop. The whole idea of full enlightenment is being totally disconnected. So you can just stop and finish. The teaching of non-self, this is someone from France, does not precisely mean in the deepest sense we are unconnected. In the deepest sense, it means that we disconnect. The whole thing can just vanish and poof. To give you the Buddha simile of a flame. A flame, like the flames behind me, depend upon three things. The wax, the wick, and the heat. When one of those three causes is extinguished, the wax is all used up. The wick is burnt through, or the wind blows the heat away. Then the flame stops, it disappears. And in this simile which the Buddha gave to Agga, to Washagota, he asked Washagota, said, where does the flame go once it's extinguished? If it's been a good flame and given light to people, warmed them, does it go to the heaven where all good flames live happily ever after? If it's burnt your homework or burnt down the school, does it go to the hell of flames where all naughty flames have to endure punishment for being bad flames? Of course not. It just stops. It's just like the human being. After enlightenment, all they were was a flame. As Elton John said. I never heard this one, but was it K candle in the wind? Yeah, there we go. Candle, it just blows out. Where does the flame go? It doesn't go anywhere. It just, and this is the word which is used in the ancient Indian language of Pali, Sanskrit. You know what the word is when a flame goes out? It nibbanas. Nibbana was a word everybody knew in the time of the Buddha. Even kids knew the word nibbana. It was a word which everybody gave to when a flame is extinguished. Poof. Gone forever. So that can't be connected. If all the flames were interconnected, the flame would never be able to go out. There'd be no freedom at all. You'd be connected to one another for eternity. If you want to be connected with one another, fine by me, but I'm getting out of here. Okay, thank you for those questions. A bit deep in the end. Any questions from our audience here? No? So now we can all just bow three times to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, and then you can disconnect and go home.